You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I don't know, bro.
Yeah.
I just saw another one. There's two videos.
The commotion in the studio right now is we just saw the video of Victory Rat at the Panther game.
Yes, sir.
I was not familiar with your game, Victory Rat. Victory Rat, for those that don't know, is a secondary mascot for the Florida Panthers, who was actually assaulted by a Lightning fan a year ago or something like that. There was a fan. You know, the Panthers crowds, they're fun. Kodak, it might be happening in Kodak Black's
Kodak
suite.
Kodak had the craziest moment I've ever
moment
seen in
there.
The Panthers game.
Victory Rat, like, sitting
close
back
second.
And saluting what was going on for him. Now, I really hope Victory Rat doesn't catch any heat for this. Victory Rat was, you know, he's an entertainer.
Doing the Lord's work out there.
Yeah, he's... Victory Rat, salute to you.
Jim.
If you haven't seen the video in question, just search Victor E. Right?
He is having
V-I-K-T-O-R.
My God.
Why do we spell it like that?
Rat.
Well,
Victory?
Victory.
Yeah,
Victory.
But we couldn't do like...
Well, because there's Stanley
Victor,
C. Panther.
Victor's a name.
Yeah. No, I know, but YK, why not V-I-C-T-O-R?
Because hockey.
That's what I'm asking. So we did it
yeah,
like...
there's Russians.
Okay. Yeah.
That's why.
Against Stanley C. Panther. Stanley's a name. Stanley Cup.
I get that. I get that.
C would be like
I get that.
Cup.
How did they spell Stanley? That's my question.
It's a trophy. For
though they spelled Stanley regular.
Yeah.
Okay. So they couldn't spell Victor regular. It had to be like a Russian.
Well, regular.
Victory. Like a win. Victory. But Victor and then E period. Like Stanley.
Either way, he was winning.
He was winning.
He was most certainly winning. And I didn't really expect that. Have you guys seen the prototypes for Nike that they put out? Asia Wilson.
The Wemby one.
Do we have a still image of the Wemby?
The Wemby one looks like I'm going to tear my ankle in it.
Well,
expeditiously.
You cut me off at the pass. Because,
is it like
as you know,
a heel almost? Like it looks like your foot is not flat.
The Asia Wilson prototype, and these are all prototypes, and I think they're really designed to get the conversation going out there, and it's a cool little stunt for Nike. But the prototype for Wembanyama is pretty gnarly. We have it up there on the screen right there. And
like,
you know,
where's
my
foot go?
That's what I'm saying. Like, are you like your foot? It looks like you're
it looks like a wedge.
Or something.
It looks like a slip in with no laces. Which,
and AI made this.
AI made all.
So like
prototypes.
The robots could be trying to injure all of our best players.
Right. Bugs
like it's starting
specifically Victor Wembanyama.
That's my takeaway from this. Is as you know, the only thing stopping Victor Wembanyama from ruining the great game of basketball is an injury. I look at those feet. Yeah, like any big man, you start there. The great game of basketball is saved if he actually runs on the court in these shoes, because those shoes will do the job. There is no way his feet can survive playing the game of basketball in that.
And that looked like a size 10.
Right. No shoestrings. How do you
He
wears like a size 25.
There is simply no way he's going to go out there with that lack of support on his feet.
For that, play barefoot.
No way.
And Pop ain't going to let that go down.
No.
Pop going to be like, no.
Did you see the 3-on-1?
It was amazing.
Did you see the 3-on-1?
I've never seen anything like that in basketball.
Where his physical presence just scares everybody from putting a shot up because they know they're like, they break away. They're in like a flying V formation and they break out to the perimeters. They have a lane to go to the cup. They refuse to. And they kick it outside. They refuse to shoot because Victor Wembanyama can close out. Guys, I know I get aggregated freezing cold take, but when I said at the moment in time that he is not a good player, thank God, because Pop didn't know how to use him. But even within that clip, if you watch the actual original clip, I was warning you, the day is nigh. And by the way, the day is here. He is absolutely turning into everything that I feared. The only mystery here is not whether or not he becomes that. It's why the Spurs are so bad right now while he's doing what he's doing right now, because he's only going to get better. My friends, the only way to stop Victor Wembanyama is with this shoe. Yeah. We need this shoe to drop.
He's already one of the three best defenders in the NBA. Maybe you say top five, but his impact on the defensive end already is ridiculous to the point where...
I'm going to start calling it the
Wemba. Yeah, I mean, it makes me wonder how truly pitiful the rest of their roster is that they're not at least a little bit better, because he is one of the most dominant forces I've seen as a rookie ever. Like, ever in the history of the league.
We've never seen anyone look like that, do these things, and right now he's still spry. The pliability. If Tom Brady didn't convince you on pliability, Victor Wembanyama going a full NBA season without any real injury questions at that frame is wild.
Brother, epiphany just came across my mind that scared me half to death. Oh. The Spurs are going to be a lottery team. Can you imagine Wimby and Zach Edey on the same damn team?
Oh, whoa. Just for fun. Big front court.
Holy damn moly, bro. Nobody getting no shots off in the
paint. I think you actually put out the scenario in which Zach Edey could work in the NBA.
Right? Alongside Wimby.
Oh, my goodness. You could, wow.
Or at least as the backup big man. Right. Like, because even if he ends up being, you know, everybody keeps comparing him to Boban. Even if he ends up being Boban, right?
Yeah.
As the backup five, where you always have someone who's 7 foot four.
If the Spurs had Boban
game,
right now, like,
they're
that's
redoing what they had with Tim Duncan and with David Robinson. Right. Now just 25 years in the future.
The crazy part and the thing that I wonder is there going to be a player who decides, yes, I want to sign in San Antonio, a star player in the league who wants to go play in San Antonio to go play with Wemby? Because that's not normally a free agent destination. I've heard people float the idea of DeJounte Murray going back to San Antonio, and those two would be outrageous together.
They did sign LaMarcus Aldridge.
Different time, though, because that was still, if I'm correct, that was still around the time that the rest of that crew was still in the league. Kawhi might have even still been there. Mm-hmm. So it was like a time where they were still in their stage of relevance of, this is the end of a dynasty. Let me help try to keep it going. Where this is a completely new era. Yeah. So this is all right, do I want to go play for Pop alongside Wemby and make that my destination? If you're especially a guard, if you're a good guard in this league and you can play along him, he'll untap so many different things in your game. It makes so much sense.
He's still doing so much stuff on the perimeter. I think it's actually, like you mentioned the Edey thing, I think it's a great location for a big that wants to just work inside, because they want to develop Wemby to the point that he's this outside force. My old concern with that, at least earlier in his career, is number one, he wasn't that good at it. He's getting way better at it. And also, the more you float out there, the more you play outside of your frame, the more susceptible you are to injury. So he's already proven me wrong in terms of the injury. I would have thought that it would have came 15 games in. And dude is out there, and he's improving game after game. Hey, it's Mike. As you know, sports are a bit crazy right now. Kind of feels like everything is happening all at once, and you have to make some decisions to prioritize if you want to support your team or go out and see some of these games. Well, I've got a recommendation for you. As someone that loves sports and loves attending live sporting events, you're always hunting the secondary market for hard-to-find tickets. I've been out there in those streets, and I know the best possible place for me and you is Game Time. It's an incredible app that is so upfront with its pricing. It's an authorized ticket marketplace of the NBA, which makes getting playoff tickets even faster and easier. Game Time, tons of last-minute deals. You can save up to 60% off buying last-minute for sports, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. Take the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
Don Le Batard.
I went in the margins. I'm like.
Your money ball of sex?
I'm basically Scott Hatterberg.
A lot of
walking.
Stugats.
A lot of walks, but I'm on base.
When it comes to sex,
a lot of foul tips.
Other dudes, they can be Giambi.
You know your role, you play well.
I know my role.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
Who wants to go next?
This is your show.
Okay. Well, I want to make everybody happy and avoid conflict. And you yelled at me, and now I'm a little afraid.
Well, I tried to wrap the last segment to keep us on time.
Yeah.
I put a bow on it for you. If you notice that, because
I feel like Mina's topic is a good segue out of this. Speaking of the concept of how we organize ourselves and how we keep order in our lives.
Okay. Yeah. It is a good. I think actually it probably flows pretty naturally from how I just described myself, which is. So the article that I brought up is by Ezra Klein, ran the New York Times, and I don't have the title of it.
Yep. Happy 20th anniversary, Gmail. I'm sorry I'm leaving you, by Ezra Klein in the New York Times.
It's basically about how Gmail is done.
Yep.
And Gmail sucks. And he kind of lays out the promise of Gmail, or the biggest sell of it was the idea that there's no limitations on the number of emails you could have because so much memory, and as opposed to, and that got me thinking about, like, I guess it's been in my life so long, I can't remember a time when we were forced to delete and organize emails, with Outlook before it or whatever services we used. I guess AOL, Hotmail.
Well, I think
whatever.
We got Gmail in college, right? Thereabouts.
Yeah.
Because I remember my school address, and then the open world of bottomless Gmail.
Yes. And Gmail as a service basically offers you all these ways to organize your email with tags and this and that, but there's no limit to the amount you get. And like a lot of people, Ezra writes about how, you know, he had millions of emails, and at a certain point he was like, this is non-functional for me anymore. I cannot use this. So he was like, I have to go in a different direction. He described a service, I believe it was called Hey, something that is more restrictive. Like, it keeps people from emailing you. It forces you to make decisions. And like when you write an email, it takes over your screen, little things like that.
It was sort of like the premise of that app, I believe, was like gatekeeping. The idea, do you approve this person to like enter your inbox?
Yeah, it gave you like the option to like blacklist, essentially, where once you do that,
a binary,
you no longer will see this email show up.
So there's a larger trend or conversation that flows from this, which is basically the internet becoming unwieldy generally, and there being too much choice, too much content, too many people who have access to you at all times, and he gets at that. But I thought it might be good to just kind of start with the framework of Gmail and to ask you guys, how big are your inboxes?
It's just
we all have our phones.
Uncomfortable. I mean, I've 3,798 unread emails.
I have 3,708 emails. That's eerily close. Libra gang, we're out here.
I mean, just like looking in a mirror.
My cosmic brother.
Looking in a lustrous bearded mirror.
Look at mine. That's my inbox.
What do we got? What are we working with?
There are 7 emails in here? Oh my God. I've truly never in person. I thought you people, like, you were a myth.
And a couple of these really shouldn't be in here either.
Oh, by the way, I should say too that like
some prospect videos, archive that.
I have 3,798 in my inbox on Gmail unread, but I have 154,030 in the promotions tag. Under forums, it's 4,066. Updates, it's 93,340.
Okay.
It's just like hundreds of thousands of emails that I just have never seen.
Just a dog pile.
This really does flow quite well from our last segment. I just want to ask you, how do you go about your day living this way? Because
blissfully, largely.
Very
okay,
easily.
So you're not, because what Ezra describes is the inability to go, just being like, it's too much. I can't deal with it.
Yeah.
I don't like this form of communication with people where, you know, I have to actively search for things. It doesn't bother you?
No, just because I think email is so much more of a passive form of communication that it doesn't, like, I think the thing that resonated with me most about this and the idea of that clutter you're describing was him talking about on this Hey service, when it takes over your whole screen, it eliminates the rest of the email box being behind it, because that's the problem I have in general with my relationship with my phone now, is there's so much on it between work, between personal life, the group chats I'm in, email threads, stuff I'm posting for work on social, that it all feels tied back to the work that draws anxiety. And so when I go in there to do one thing, I end up getting inundated by something else that pops up, and it distracts me to the point where a lot of times I just set it down and have to put it away.
Yeah, I have like almost an eclipse glasses relationship with my inbox. I'm like, I'm not gonna look directly at it. I'm just gonna like, yep, that's a thing I should deal with.
You peek a little though.
Peek a little bit. But for me, the thing that resonated from Ezra Klein's column was this notion of a shame closet.
Yes.
So this concept of like, it's the place you put everything so you don't have to figure out what to do with it. And as I was contemplating, I saw the headline of his article and I was like, fuck this dude. Like Gmail and me, we get along great. It's not stressful. If the search function is actually key to it, right? Like if I need to find something, I'll get a couple of date qualifiers and like subject lines and all that stuff, attachments. I can find it. But what I realized as I was reading it was that it is like my photo album on my phone at this point, on my iCloud, where it's just hundreds of thousands of things that I don't have an intuitive sense of. Like, I know if I need to get something, I can find it. It'll just take me a long time. And it's just, it's detaching me from the premise of like, oh, I consult a nice tidy box of people trying to reach out to me. Instead, it's like a ball pit where I'm like searching for treasures at the bottom of
it. So I have that with photos, actually. What you mentioned photos, where we used to be like, what are the best photos I took at this thing? And now you just take a zillions of them and you look and you try to find, you kind of lose, you know, I mean, having a child now, it literally is just millions and millions of photos. And it really bothers me and stresses me out knowing that I can't find a photo. Like if I want to find a photo from something that happened in a specific year, I most of the time, like, I'm not really sure if I can find it. I know there's like search functions, but they don't really work super well.
Yeah.
It's like, the AI, you can put in like sunset.
Yeah.
And you'll get all of the sunsets, but also it's imperfect.
That bothers me a lot, but I actually have been like, I should take a day and go through all my photos and like, you know, but I'm just not going to do it. Whereas with emails, it's like, okay, I have kept this thing under control and I want to keep doing it because it would bother me in the same way knowing.
That's a Virgo for you, buddy. Look at that.
Yeah. I guess, so is it so it's the fact that you can't immediately control all the parts of it, that it is just something that overflows in a way that you can't somehow organized.
Like a lot of, when we think about like, what do I have to do today? Okay, what do I have to do today? I had a taping at 12. I had this taping at 2. Those are the main things. I got, you know, my hair done. But inevitably every day you have to reply to emails. Mm-hmm. I can't fathom conquering that part of my to-do list without a clear look at the emails in front of me, without a clear look at like, okay, I have 7 emails in my inbox. I have to reply to 2 of them today. If it was millions, I don't know even how I would begin to assess which ones matter to like understand go about it.
My approach to scheduling my day is comically incompetent compared to Mina.
What is your approach?
So for a long time, it used to be my to-do list was a draft of an email in Gmail. So it'd just be like an email that was blank that I would fill in with like my tasks and it would save because it was a draft. And I would just update it day by day. Like, oh, I did this thing. Let me delete that. So it's like a constantly updating single email that was like very, very simple and like the opposite of like strategic. And then it got to be, I use Google Calendar, but in Google Calendar, I'll put like reply to this email.
Yes.
And it'll just move every day. So there are some to-do tasks about responding to like a friend from high school who's like, can you meet this kid that asked me for like a career advice, wants to get into sports media? I'm like, cool, absolutely. And it's been following me on delay for literally a month.
The sort of question hanging over all of this is like, is this actually a problem, right? Because as your client presents, this is a problem. And I think it is a problem, one, if it gives you psychological stress in the case of emails, and it sounds like we're all fine because we've all figured out our relationship with it is different. But I do think that there is an actual problem.
Is there
here.
A better way?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, so with the question about photos, it's like, what does it mean when you can have infinite everything?
Music.
Is that the problem that you're talking about? Like, what did you think the actual problem was?
Yeah, I think the email thing is a little bit different from photos and music and search and all of that, because if there is a problem, it's if you don't have a handle on it. Like, either you have a handle on it, which sounds like you guys do, or I do, but we do in our different ways.
One of the Pablos does, yeah.
I think there are, like, we're all actually like, oh, we're fine. I think there are a lot of people who are like Ezra Klein and who are, like, very much stressed by the way email is conducted now, where, like, you don't, it's just so overwhelming and you lose sight of what to reply to and it's just too much. I think that that is the thing. But I think with regards to actual like the photos and music and content, that is something I actually view as more of a problem for myself, because I think the way my mind works is it is easier for me to wrap my mind around, you know, something that's limited in a way, like
right.
like 20 photos or a single album or whatnot that I have to listen to all the way through. And I think my experience of those things, photos, music, news, has degraded because I have so much choice.
I think that's one of those things that also you can zoom out more. And one of the things he talks about at the end of this is he lumps social media into this is also. And the line that really hit me was, I've stored everything and I've saved nothing. Yes. Like this idea that there's a lack of permanence to all these things. And it's this, what you just described always makes me think of when people talk about just humans in general and their relationship with social media. Like we were built to exist in groups up to a certain size. And now we're simply interacting with too many people all the time. And does it limit or cheapen the value of each of those interactions the same way that having too much music keeps you from really enjoying one bit by having all of these interactions? And the idea in here that like, oh, have I given so much of myself to this space, like on social media, where I have not contributed meaningfully to actual relationships in my life in a way that's beneficial and has permanence.
And when it comes to email, it's like you have been sort of like fighting the battle for intention. And I've like so far, I gave up on that battle so long ago that now email is effectively not an effective way to reach me.
Yeah.
Which is very true.
A thing that I'm not mad about insofar as like, one goal I have in general is I don't want to be expected to be super responsive on so many platforms. Like if you got to get to me, you need to like the terror alert scale color needs to be like red, right? Like call me, text me is like an orange. An email, it's like I may get back to you in 6 months, legitimately, which is not the worst way to gatekeep, but it does mean that email as a concept is just less, it's less useful to anybody who deals with me.
I just never want to be called by anyone, so please just send me an email.
Don Le Batard.
We got Afrini Hardaway.
Afrini? Who is Afrini Hardaway?
I was trying to read fast. UD was on the team. Luke Jackson. Bobby Jones. The Matrix, Sean Marion.
Stugatz.
Zoe, Shaq, Smush Parker. Chris Quinn.
Hey, wait a minute.
D Wade.
Wait a minute.
Jason Williams, Darrell Wright. I mean, stacked roster.
This is the Don Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
What's up, fight fans? MMA Hangout presented by Cuervo, and we finally made it. UFC 300 week. Danny Segura, MMA junkie, your boy 10-Day Tony. We're going to break down possibly the biggest card of the year. UFC 299 was huge, but UFC 300 from top to bottom. Main card, prelims, early prelims. It is a absolutely stacked card. Danny, first off, what's up, brother? Second off, how do you see 300, the excitement of 300? Obviously, you're doing work for MMA Junkie. You've got all of the weigh-ins. You've got the press conferences. You've got all these different things. Break us down, like what a week like this would look like for you.
Hell, pretty much. as a fan, I'm excited because the fights are going to be amazing. You know, we've seen some of these Apex card bees, not so great. But this, dude, literally, you got former champions opening up the preliminary card. Yes. Davidson Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt. So from start to bottom, this card is going to be amazing. But yes, the fight week itself is going to be quite hectic. Press conference, they're going to have every single person of the card on the press conference. Media day, every single fighter.
That's crazy.
There's going to be 26 fighters in total. So it's a lot of video, a lot of editing, a lot going on. But over at the MMA Junkie team, we're a well-oiled machine. So we got this.
The main event came together. There was a lot of speculation across a lot of different weight classes. I'll let the rumors, you know, I'll let you talk about the rumors and all that. There was rumors of Islam. There was rumors of could John Jones be healthy enough? There was rumors of everybody, right? Then they settled on the light heavyweight title fight of Alex Pereira versus Jamal Hill, who last year tore his Achilles in an MMA basketball game. Don't ask me why they'd be doing that, but tore his Achilles, had to vacate his title. Pereira comes in, wins it,
And now we've got a match between essentially champion versus champion because Jamal Hill never lost his title, right? When you look at this fight and how the UFC kind of brought it together, what would first, when they announced it, were you like, eh, this is okay? But now that it's kind of given some room to grow, has it opened up like a nice bottle of wine?
Man, I feel like I'm being unfair to this fight just because it's 300. So just for the people, and I'll address the rumors. Just real quick, 301 is in Brazil. So the next pay-per-view is in Brazil. Pereira's Brazilian. Mm-hmm. He's maybe the biggest star right now from Brazil. So they wanted to make him and Jamal Hill, who is recovering from that injury that you mentioned that is has a quite lengthy recovery time. They didn't have a main event for UFC 300. They didn't want to put Conor in there. Timeline didn't align. They tried John Jones. They tried Islam. They tried a bunch of stuff. None of it worked. So what do? They moved the main event from 301 to 300, which a lot of people are speculating is even Jamal Hill healthy enough to be competing at this date? And did he just take it because they offered him more money or whatever the case it was in order for him to get a sooner date? So anyways, this light heavyweight fight is amazing, but because it's not a McGregor, it's not a Brock Lesnar, it's not, you know, these names that we're accustomed to seeing in this in these 100 events. A lot of people are kind of talking shit about it and disappointed on it. But like, to be honest, it's two scary strikers with tons of power that have given us tons of finishes and fight of the nights. This is a fantastic fight. It might just not be as sexy, but look at the rest of the card. I mean, it's stacked the bottom. So getting a little bit of hate because of it, but still a great main event.
When you look at the actual fight, last time we saw Jamal Hill, who's beating Glover Teixeira in Brazil, like that was a massive, massive win for Jamal Hill in a fight that was bloody. It was everything you would want from a light heavyweight title fight. And now re-racking it next, you know, the next year, and you have Alex Pereira, who Glover is in his camp. Glover is basically like his father. Yeah, bro, exactly. Yeah. Like his mentor, his father here in the United States. To me, that gives Boatan such an advantage because Glover Teixeira has already fought Jamal Hill. He already knows kind of what the pain points are, how to take him down, how to, you know, the combinations that he needs to be effective. And let's just be honest, is Boatan, has he had the best 11 fight run in UFC history? He's 9-2. He's won titles in two weight classes. Like, is this the best 11 fight run ever?
100%. 100%. I mean, people need to wrap their minds around this. 11 fights usually doesn't even get you in the UFC.
Right.
11 fights. And within 11 fights, this guy is already a UFC vet. Like, he's already got a bunch of fights in him. He's won the UFC middleweight belt, and he's won the light heavyweight belt, and he's headlining UFC 300. Mm-hmm. This is ridiculous. I mean, if you can put together the most successful 11 fight run in the history of the sport, this is it. I mean, what the guy has achieved in just 11 professional MMA bouts is just unreal. Yeah, just crazy stuff.
Yeah, and he's beaten killers too. It hasn't been like the Bo Nichols of the world where he's fought in every tomato can that's out there. Cody Brundage, no disrespect to you, but come on, right? And he's fighting killers. Like what he did to Strickland was insane.
Yeah.
Strickland ends up coming back and winning the middleweight belt against Israel Adesanya and walks him down the entire fight, right? So this guy is such a special fighter. I think we're going to get a very special main event because Jamal Hill is one thing he's going to do is stand up and bang.
Yeah.
That's what this is. It's a perfect scenario for fight fans that love watching guys stand up, trade blows with absolute just hands of steel fighting against each other. These are like two robots fighting against each other.
Yeah, for the casuals, I would say this is like almost the perfect main event because, you know, if you're already, you know, a few Jose Cuervo shots in and, you know, you're vibing at the bar, last thing you want to see some like super technical fight on the ground or whatever the case may be. Dude, these guys are going to go at it. They're going to go for the finish. It's just a fantastic main event as far as action-wise. It might not be as sexy as maybe other names, but like action-wise, this is as good as it gets, man.
It's a huge, huge fight. Who do you have? Brass tacks. Ooh. Get down to it.
I'm going to go Pereira. Look, as you mentioned, Glover is the mentor of Alex Pereira. And, you know, they already prepared for Jamal. They did a whole training camp for Jamal Hill. So they already have a lot of footage, a lot of knowledge on him. I'm sure Pereira had to mimic a lot of what Jamal Hill does in that training camp as well. And look, I think there's a horrible matchup for Hill. he's coming from an Achilles tear, which we know that that's a pretty big injury, and he's coming earlier than he was supposed to. And then on top of that, you know, you got Poatan with tons of activity, all the momentum in the world. And I think the matchup itself is just terrible. I mean, he's not fighting a Glover Teixeira that's got, you know, questionable striking at this point and really good wrestling. No, he's fighting probably the most decorated striker right now in mixed martial arts.
Crazy.
And his thing's striking. So it's like, the way I see it is A-plus fighting, you know, B-plus or A-minus. You know, Poatan just has an edge everywhere. But both these guys have power, so it could always end in a finish in either side. But you got to put the money on the most technical guy, which is Pereira.
It's going big on big, like strength versus strength. We're going to line up across each other and say, hey, I got hands of steel. You got hands of steel. Let's make it happen. So I'm super excited for this. I'm going to go with you there. I think Pereira retains the light heavyweight belt.
Shama.
He's just on another level right now. The women's strawweight championship, Zhang Wei Li versus Yan Xiaonan. China, stand up. 100%. I think Zhang Wei Li right now is at a different level. After those couple losses to Rose Namajunas, she's gone on a tear. I think she's a special fighter right now. I like Yan. Like, I thought she's fought well, but she does not have the pedigree that I think Zhang Wei Li does as far as the fights that she's put together and the championship fights that she's put together.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly a huge gap in experience. I think there's a huge gap in athleticism here and just in overall skill. Zhang Wei Li is one of the most well-rounded fighters out there today. I mean, she's got the wrestling, she's got the jiu-jitsu, ground and pound, striking, toughness, athleticism. She's a great fighter. She's fantastic. Zhang Xiaonan is a good fighter, but I think far more limited than Wei Li. So I'm going with Wei Li in this one. And I'm a little bit like, I don't know if the word would be surprised, but I don't know. I feel like this fight's not getting a lot of attention between the main event, the BMF, the lightweight action. I feel like it's been kind of overlooked, but this is a pretty good fight.
It really is. And anytime we see Zhang Wei Li, like, she's going to put on a show. Like, that's what she's done in the UFC is put on great fights. I'm sticking with Zhang Wei Li. I think she's going to retain the belt.
Don Levitard.
While I was gone, a third Zagacki was born, and I think I heard, correct me if I'm wrong here, Jeremy trying to partake in a fourth Zagacki, and I am here for a future where I am surrounded by a chorus of clucking Zagacki.
Stugats.
You know what it means when you have four Zagackis, Dan. You don't have one.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugats.
Let's move over to a lightweight battle, Elevated, the BMF belt. Wow. When you talk about a fight, this could headline another card somewhere else. Like, yes. This is that good of a fight. Justin Gaethje versus Max Blessed Holloway. Wow.
Amazing fight. The only thing is, look, this, I'm going to shit on it and people are going to be like, oh, you know, he's MMA hipster, this and that.
Oh, no.
But I'm going to shit on it a little bit. Look, from an action standpoint, amazing. The fact that Holloway's going up to 155, I've been clamoring for the guy to give it another shot, especially given how the division has panned out. But the BMF title, I don't know, man. You saw the inauguration. That was between our boy here, the 305 King, Jorge Masvidal, and Nate Diaz. That felt fitting. You've been around, I'm sure, Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway, badass fighters, scary as shit, in the octagon, but outside of it, two of the nicest people you can
Nice guys.
I feel like for the BMF title, you got to have a little bit of a criminal record. I looked at recorded fights in the backyard, on the street, at a bar, a few skirmishes here and there, maybe a felony charge, maybe a battery charge. I feel like that's got to be a requirement for these type of fights. You don't think so?
I mean, I see where you're going. And you look at Justin Gaethje, you look at Max Holloway, and you're like, they are bad. But what does bad mean? Are we talking bad in the octagon? Are we talking bad overall? Like, George and Nate Diaz, two guys that you can categorize bad guys.
There's bad recorded guys. Street fights from both on the internet, plenty of them. I feel like that's a requirement.
If you put it this way, this is where I draw the line on, are you bad? If you have fought in pre-iPhone, okay, there's video of you fighting pre-iPhone with jean shorts on. You're a bad dude.
Yeah.
You're a bad dude.
Yeah.
I need to see the jean shorts, the long jean shorts. If you have never fought in jean shorts pre-iPhone, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough for sure.
That's my whole thing. Like BMF, I don't know where we're going with this. I don't know where this is going to lead. First title defense ever for the BMF. So we'll see if this is going to be a continuous thing. I don't know.
When you look at the fight, technically, two guys that are fighting very well. We haven't seen Max be tested in the last couple fights. Justin just knocked out Dustin Poirier. Poirier comes back, does what he did. Like, there's a lot of steam for Justin right now because there's a lot of steam for Dustin. And Justin knocked out Dustin with a head kick. UFC, what was it, 291?
I think it was. Yeah, it was in July of last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one's a weird one because, again, like, we don't really know what the BMF title really means at this point in time, but it obviously brings a lot of eyeballs. We're talking about it right now. I know the fight before that, Charles Oliveira versus Armin Sarukian got labeled as a title eliminator to fight Islam. But, dude, I feel like if Justin Gaethje wins, defends his belt, gets a sexier win, a knockout, something a little bit more, more impacting than Oliveira or Sarukian, bro, I think he should probably get the next title shot, given in mind that he also beat Poirier. So, I don't know. But this is a great fight. I think the best result for the sport, hear me out, is going to be Max Holloway just because he just makes so much sense, so much interesting matchups now at 155 if he gets a win. Plus, he can always return with that BMF belt, fight Ilia Topuria. That's a badass fight at 145. But if Gaethje wins, it's also not bad either. This is a fantastic fight. I'm going to go with Gaethje on this one.
Wow.
But I think the power difference is going to be big here.
That's the question, right? Max moving up, does the power move up with him? Or is the power that he has at Feather, like, kind of what he is, right? Because there's a lot of guys that make that transition, that power doesn't follow him, and then you're stuck. You're giving your best shots, and he's eating them, and you're like, that's kind of all I got. So there's nothing else that I got going on here. It felt like when Izzy went up to light heavy, and he's throwing shots, and it was like, all right, this kind of doesn't really matter because he's not knocking anybody out with that. I'm going to stick with you on this. I like Gaethje. I think he's just fighting at an elite level right now, and I think he's gassed up for what he saw Dustin do to Saint-Denis, right? Like, that was like, oh, wait a second. Like, I just beat a guy who's still a killer, and if things go right, I can get another title shot. Things do get a little bit more complicated if Gaethje wins, because then you got Gaethje versus Dustin. Feels like Dustin deserves at least one more shot to get a title. But then if Gaethje's in the way, does that happen? So I think for Dustin fans, I think it's important to see Max Holloway with a W.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, the UFC lightweight title picture is going to get shaken up, widely affected by the results from 300. So we'll see. The next title challenger will come out of this card, I think. But who knows? Maybe it's Poirier. Who knows?
Moving on to the lightweight title eliminator, as it's been dubbed, Charles Oliveira, Armin Sarukian. Danny, I feel like this is your favorite fight on the card.
Yeah, it is. Dude, this is just such a badass fight. Probably action-wise, Gaethje and Holloway is going to be crazier, but I do feel like if we are looking at the highest level of fighting, this is the fight on the 300. This is, I think, the highest level of mixed martial arts that's going to be displayed on that night. Charles Oliveira, I mean, dude, the Bronx with the with those super white teeth, you know. You know, that was pricey, you know.
The he's got platinum blonde hair.
Yeah. I mean, you can't hate on Charles Oliveira. That dude's just a badass. Striker, jiu-jitsu, like, the guy just has it all. He's super dangerous. And Sarukian is a bad dude as well. He knocked out Dariush recently. Mm-hmm. He's been racking up wins. A lot of people don't know, but he made his debut on short notice against Islam Makhachev back when Makhachev wasn't a champion.
On a fight night.
In a fight night, and gave him, I believe, one of the toughest fights of his career. So this is a badass fight. This is a badass fight. I'm really looking forward to it. And I do hope that the winner here gets the title shot, because I do think the winner here will be the rightful number one contender at 155.
It just worries me that Sarukian, in the fight itself, like, let's take the title picture out of it. DuBronx has been in that deep water. He's fought in Makhachev. He's fought in, you name it, he's fought him, right? Sarukian hasn't had, outside of Makhachev early, he hasn't had that guy to test him the way that DuBronx has had people test him. And it feels to me like Charles is ready for a war that Sarukian has never been in, right? Yeah. And when you look at the experience, you look at the power that he has behind his hands, you look at the excellent jiu-jitsu that Charles has, it just feels to me like there is no reason why he should be a dog of this magnitude. I think he's plus 190. It's might have moved since then on DraftKings, but he's a dog. And it's like, I'm looking across and there's tons of MMA people that are way smarter than me. But for me, it just feels like easy money looking at Charles, looking at his ability, his experience, and Sarukian. I get it. He's incredible. He's probably the next up in this division when things clear out from the old guard. But how can I go against Charles? How?
Yeah, and I think a good bet here would be Charles Oliveira by finish. I mean, mm-hmm. we've seen Sarukian get rocked by sort of lesser quality opponents. But again, Sarukian is just 27. You got to be careful with fighters that are at around 27, 28, because the leaps that they make in between fights, I mean, are just huge, right? So this guy
is a good example.
Great example. So this guy could very well go out there and just starch Charles Oliveira and then just be the future of the division. He's certainly beaten some solid guys. Since losing to Makhachev, he's only lost once and has defeated quality opponents. Not of the level of Charles Oliveira, but again, we've seen escalation, which is a signal for evolution. So I do believe that we're going to see an improved version of Sarukian this Saturday. Will it be enough to beat Oliveira? Bro, Oliveira's got my heart. I cannot bet against that man. So I'm going to go with Oliveira. And I think he finishes Sarukian. But hey, there's something there with Sarukian for sure. He's going to be a future title challenger and maybe even champion at some point.
I'm going to give you a very, very easy comp right now. There was a guy last card that was the future of this division against a guy who's a little bit older. And then the guy who's a little bit older starch the guy who's the next cup in this division. I'm just going to put that out there. Dustin versus Saint-Denis. Just throwing it out there. Charles versus Sarukian. The old guard is like, wait a second. We still got some stuff.
Yeah. I mean, Gagey's thriving. The old guard is still in there. It's still hanging in there for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Last fight of the main card. We'll make this quick because it's going to be quick. I feel like Bo Nickel versus Cody Brundage in a middleweight fight to kick off the main card for UFC 300. It pretty simple. Bo Nickel. He's better all around.
Bo Nickel. I mean, I think that's the breakdown you gotta give him. But yeah, we know what the UFC is doing here. Cody Brundage, he's got 8 fights in the UFC. I believe he's 4-4. He's a decent opponent. I mean, the fact that you've made it in the UFC and you almost got 10 fights in the promotion, that means you gotta be like pretty damn good, because it's hard to get to the UFC and then much harder to stay in the UFC. But look, I think the matchup here is for Bo Nickel to run through Cody Brundage and have a showcase in the first fight of the pay-per-view and really turn him into a star. That's what the game plan seems from the UFC standpoint.